Namaskar, dear students. Hope you are fine today. You are listening to name of the book, Indian Economy, Problems of Development and Planning, which is the 28th edition of 2002. And this is written by author A.N. Agarwal and published by Vishwa Prakashan. Recording would include few required and important topics and subtopics which were marked by the students in the contents part. Reader's name, Prarthana Unkalkar. So now, the first topic which we are going to cover is underdevelopment. I hope you are paying full attention because we are covering the most important topics from this textbook. So first topic is underdevelopment, and under this we would be covering the main characteristics. So shall we start? Okay, so the main characteristics. While the substance of underdevelopment lies in the non-development of resources, this fact exhibits itself in a number of weaknesses of underdeveloped countries. We describe them to spotlight the various facets of underdevelopment. In this connection, it may be stated that underdeveloped countries differ widely in history, geography, social structures and traditions. Therefore, there are a large variety of features that mark these countries. We shall, however, concentrate upon the features which are basic ones and which are found in varying degrees in almost all these countries. These characters may be listed under three broad groups, namely those pertaining to economic aspect of backwardness, the institutional makeup, and the dual nature of these economics. So, which are these characteristics? The main characteristics may be listed under how many broad groups? Three broad groups, right? Namely, those pertaining to economic aspect of backwardness, then the institutional makeup, and the third one is the dual nature of these economics. Now, we will listen to all these characteristics in detail. So, number one character is, which is it? Yes, economic backwardness. So, first main characteristic, economic backwardness. The principal characteristics that conjure up the underdeveloped nature of backward economies may be summarized under following eight heads. Listen to it very carefully. So, it will be under economic backwardness, you are having eight heads. So, which is those? Low income, predominance of agriculture, predominance of primary exports, insufficient capital and traditional techniques, illiteracy and skill shortage, serious population pressure and unemployment and disguised unemployment. I'll repeat. Low income, predominance of agriculture, predominance of primary exports, inefficient capital and traditional techniques, illiteracy and skill shortage, serious population pressure and unemployment and disguised unemployment. So let us go through all these eight in detail. First one, low income. One predominant characteristic of most underdeveloped economies is their low income. Very low per capita income symbolizes this fact, although this does not reveal out fully the fact of misery for the vast masses. It is so because the per capita income includes also the income of the rich. Given the fact of income inequalities, the average income of a poor comes to be very low indeed. There are large many whose incomes are even less than this low average income. They are below the poverty line, the destitutes. This harsh reality of absolute low income is compounded by the vast difference between the income of these countries and of the developed countries. Through the mirror of rich the poor see themselves as more miserable. The figures more than anything else demonstrate in relative terms the low levels of these countries. As per capita, the latest estimates for 1999, the per capita income in Switzerland is as much as $38,350. In Japan, it is $32,230. In Sweden, $25,640. In the USA, $30,600. And in UK, $22,640. As against all these, the less developed countries stand nowhere. Their incomes just pale into insignificance, with $370 for Bangladesh, $780 for China, and $450 for India and $820 for Sri Lanka. No wonder that even the physical existence of large many people in the economically backward countries is uncertain and unbearable. Poverty takes its heavy toll in physical sense and lowers the quality of the human beings. Next comes underused natural resources. So, first was low income and second is underused natural resources. In the midst of poverty, one finds these countries having natural resources which are far from being fully used. There are, for example, large many known resources which are not being put to use. This is so even in case of land which is not being properly used. In fact, the position has become worse when compared to the advanced countries like Australia, Canada and the USA. Unfortunately, the solution which lies in an intensive use of the land is not being applied adequately. As a result, the productivity of the land continues to be low indeed. Equally unfortunate part of the story is that the information is grossly inadequate in respect of the quality and the quantity of many types of resources. There is again almost a complete lack of scientific surveys with regard to potential benefits of vital resources like water, forests, and other ecologically important features of these economies. Another weakness is that inadequacy of technology being used or developed for discovering new resources or new sites of the known resources, or economizing in the use of existing resources as is being done in developed countries. Third point being predominance of agriculture. First, low income. Second, underused natural resources. And now, predominance of agriculture. When one unavails the profile of economies of the countries, one is struck by the predominance of agriculture in their economic structures. This feature is best reflected in following two basic facts. One is that most of the domestic products of these countries, ranging from around 25 to 50%, and even more, originates in agriculture. This is far more than its share in developed countries, which varies 2 to 4%. As for example, in case of USA, UK, Germany and Canada. Conversely, because of inadequate growth of industries as also services, in the less developed countries, the contribution of non-agricultural sector is far less. In developed countries, the opposite is true. The second fact is that much larger proportion of labor force is engaged in agriculture and a much less in non-agricultural operations as compared to developed countries. The following figures bear this out. In early 1990s, the proportion, that is the percentage of active population engaged in agricultural occupation for selected developed countries was the UK 2, the USA 3, Canada 3, Australia 6 and France 5. As against this, the percentage in some underdeveloped countries was Pakistan 52%, Bangladesh 65%, India 64% and China 72%. These two facts show that economies of these countries are basically agricultural in character. Such an economic structure inevitably leads to one consequence. It is that a major proportion of population, around 80%, lives in villages, and a smaller portion, around 20% or less, lives in urban areas. This is in sharp contrast to the developed countries where the rural-urban population picture is opposite to it. This accounts for the lack of modern industrial culture in less developed countries. All this reveals the weaknesses of the economic structure dramatically. Even agriculture, which from time immemorial has employed so high a proportion of labor force, neither supplies enough food for the population nor high income jobs for those who depend upon it. Poverty originates here because of low productivity of agriculture. Next comes the predominance of primary exports. So we heard low income, underused natural resources, predominance of agriculture, and now predominance of primary exports. The exports of these countries generally depend upon primary goods. These consist of minerals as also agricultural products, mostly the latter. In case of some countries, the number of products exported is very few. In some cases, one or two goods provide the bulk of exports. In the African countries, for instance, coca constitutes a very important export product. Export of these products sometimes account for 50% or more of the export earnings of some of these countries. This is in total contrast to the composition of exports of advanced industrial countries. The bulk of their exports consist of industrial manufactured goods. The predominance of primary exports gives rise to three serious consequences. First, the export earnings of less developed countries do not show a rising trend. As the demand for agricultural products is less income elastic, there is little or no rise in the exports even when incomes are rising in the developed countries. The demand for these products is also less price elastic, so that little can be expected by way of rise in export even when prices fall. Second, these countries face secular unfavorable terms of trade. The export goods are nature-based. Their production is undertaken by innumerable small producers in almost competitive conditions. As such, their supplies and prices are not amenable to much control or regulations. As against this, the imports of these countries consist mostly of industrial products. Their production depends mostly on man's efforts. Their production is carried on by much smaller number of producers under conditions of imperfect competition. As such, the producers are in a position to control or regulate their supplies and prices. Industrial producers are therefore in an advantageous position in bargaining with the importers of underdeveloped countries. The result is that advanced countries charge more for their industrial products and pay less for primary products. Hence, unfavorable terms of trade for underdeveloped countries. An associated third consequence is equally serious. Most of the gains in agricultural progress caused by increase in investment and or technological improvements in the less developed countries get passed on to advanced countries through the lowering of agricultural prices. As agricultural producers are at a disadvantage in bargaining in the international market. So this was predominance of primary exports. So we covered low income, underused natural resources, predominance of agriculture, predominance of primary exports. What are all these? These are the main characteristics which are covered under economic backwardness, reasons for economic backwardness. So which is the next reason? Insufficient capital and traditional techniques. Another glaring characteristic of these countries is the insufficiency of capital and the use of traditional techniques, both of which keep the output per man hour very low. Since of the two main sources of the increase in output, capital per worker and the technical progress, the latter cannot occur in the abstract. The former becomes the all-important determining factor of productivity. It therefore follows that the existing simple and primitive techniques of these countries are such largely because the stock of capital goods is very small, and this state of affairs is the result of low levels of savings investment that have prevailed in these countries in long past and continues to be so in the present time. The lowness of capital formation, as also the persistence of traditional techniques, is caused by two principal reasons: the insufficiency of surplus over and above what is necessary to maintain the life of society, and the unproductive consumption of large percentage of surplus by essentially parasitical classes, like you may say landlords, moneylenders, speculators, etc. No doubt in the recent past, efforts have been made to overcome the initial hurdle by diverting a major part of surplus to development. These efforts have taken the form of revolution in some countries and government planning in others with outside help. But these efforts have not obviously come up to the needed level, as is evident from large many underdeveloped countries still with grossly inadequate capital stock. So just now we read insufficient capital and traditional techniques. So coming to next head, that is illiteracy and skill shortage. So we covered low income, underused natural resources, predominance of agriculture, predominance of primary exports, insufficient capital and traditional techniques, and now illiteracy and skill shortage. No less important is the feature that pertains to the low quality of the population of these countries. The educational system of these countries, including training facilities, is inadequate in terms of quantity and defective in terms of quality. The number of literates is small. Teaching facilities in terms of teachers, buildings, schools, books, equipment, etc. are grossly short and ill-suited for improvement of the quality of the labor. And the absence of education creates shortages in skilled manpower, so very essential to man the installed projects and to carry forward the movement for higher development. The quality of human factor is also deficient in respect of two major types of development personnel, namely innovators and managers, considered by some experienced observers as the greatest single obstacle to economic development. For economic development to be initiated, accelerated, and sustained, there must be men who can perceive new possibilities and who are willing to take risks. They are rare even in industrial countries. They are still more rare in less developed countries. To an extent, governments in these countries may fill the gap, but the hands of government are too full in providing such basic services as economic and social infrastructure. It is in fact a situation of general shortage of innovators and managers from which government also suffers. So, what was the topic which we covered? That is the reason which we covered: illiteracy and skill shortage. Next comes serious population pressure. So, which were the reasons for economic backwardness? Recollect. Yeah, low income, underused natural resources. Next, predominance of agriculture, predominance of primary exports, insufficient capital and traditional techniques, illiteracy and skill shortage, and now comes serious population pressure. Serious population pressure. A feature with serious implications is the rapidly rising population. It consumes away an increasing share of surplus, leaving meager amount for capital formation. In fact, large investments continue to be wasted on merely keeping up the existing low levels of living and public social services like water supply, health facilities, etc. So, population growth at around 2-3% has become a problem for these countries with no more arable land available for cultivation, and consequently with man-land ratio becoming so adverse that additional workers add little to output. The seriousness of the problem can be further gauged from the degree of population pressure, judged partly by the ratio of farm workers to arable land. The number of males engaged in agriculture per square kilometer of standard farm land, for example, is 1.2 in United States and 1.7 in Canada. While for India and Pakistan it is 30, and for Egypt it is around 75. The more developed countries of the West too face this problem in their early stages of development. But the prospect of population pressure was averted largely by continued improvement of agricultural technology, by massive food imports from America, and eventually by a fall in the birth rate to the level at which population growth becomes stable at 1% or so per year. It is not so with the present-day underdeveloped countries, with death rate rapidly falling and the birth rate crawling down very slowly. These countries have been engulfed by the overcrowding of human beings. The population explosion, besides draining the country's resources for development, is thwarting technical improvements because of subdivision and fragmentation of agricultural holdings. Now, next comes underemployment and disguised unemployment. I hope you are recollecting all the reasons for economic backwardness. So, underemployment and disguised unemployment. Another feature of very serious nature is unemployment. It is peculiar to these countries and is of two types. One is underemployment. It is a phenomenon wherein workers do not work fully or full hours of the day throughout the year. This is caused by lack of works or jobs. So is the case in respect of second time, namely disguised unemployment. Under it, workers are apparently engaged in work, but their contribution is either little or nothing to the output. Mostly found in the agricultural sector, disguisedly unemployed workers share the existing work with farm workers. With total work remaining the same, the increase in the number of workers does not mean increase in productive employment. Another way of putting the same thing is that the marginal product of such labor is zero or near zero. In other words, if some of the workers are withdrawn from the farm, output will not fall. Put together, the unemployment of these countries is structural in nature. It symbolizes, what does it symbolize? It symbolizes that there is lack of work. So now we finished one main characteristic, that was economic backwardness. So what were the principal characteristics, which were the main features or the reasons for economic backwardness? Yeah, please try to recollect which all reasons we read. First one was low income, underused natural resources. Yes, third one was predominance of agriculture. Four, predominance of primary exports. Then fifth one was insufficient capital and traditional techniques. Sixth one was illiteracy and skill shortage. Seventh one was serious population pressure. And the last one being underemployment and disguised unemployment. So we finish the first characteristic, economic backwardness. So now moving to the second characteristic, that is institutional and market imperfections. So this is the second main characteristic for underdevelopment. First one, economic backwardness. Second one, institutional and market imperfections. Institutionally, two less developed countries exhibit certain features which are peculiar to them. No less significant are market imperfections that go with an irrational functioning of the system. Defective institutions. This is the subheading under the institutional and market imperfections, that is defective institutions. Largely, the institutions of these countries are rooted in a subsistence economy. The agencies, including households, are accustomed to provide inputs that just justify for production meant for self-consumption. Very small is the surplus, if any. Still less are the agencies seeking surpluses for investment. Work ethics and attitudes in the frame of caste, class, clan, customs are anything but helpful for large production, much less for risky ventures. Financing agencies are tailored more to the needs of traders, holders, and speculators, and the least for industrial entrepreneurship. Even the government expenditures are mostly on non-development items like police, military, etc. Government revenues are too meager, with taxes for rising even when national income rises. Then comes fragmentations and distortions of markets. First was defective institutions, then fragmentations and distortions of markets. A typically underdeveloped country is beset with a defective market organization. It is to be seen in the fragmentation of a country's market into watertight compartments with no or very little communication among these parts. There are, for example, several markets for same product or same factor. As a result, the prices of different products and the factors do not reflect their true demand or supplies. Their prices are thus distorted, and in consequence, there is a gross distortion in the use of resources. Such distortions are many. One may list the following principal ones. workers in rural areas where the bulk of labor force resides get much less than urban workers. Workers in urban areas being more organized extract much more than is justified by the demand supply conditions. White collar and the professional salaries are much higher as compared to that of common laborers' wages in advanced countries. Interest rates vary more widely than do in developed economy, with higher rates in rural than in urban areas. Product market is dominated by monopoly or oligopoly because of the small size of the local markets. Uneconomic and even unjustified exchange rates, often implemented through controls and quotas and other administrative fiats. So now we completed institutional and market imperfections. Under this, we covered defective institutions, and second was fragmentations and distortions of markets. So we covered the two main characteristics. First was economic backwardness, under which we covered some 8 heads, and then institution and market imperfections, under which were two subheads, that is defective institutions and fragmentations and distortions of markets. Now coming to the third head, that is dualism of the less developed economies. Another feature is the dualistic nature of many less developed countries. This feature marks the economic as also the social organization of these countries. Now what is dualism? Dualism refers to the existence of two sets of economic activities at two levels, traditional and modern, with the former by far the most important. Between the two there is little give and take, so that these constitute two economies and two societies within the geographical boundaries of an underdeveloped country. Traditional sector. This sector is largely a subsistence sector of economy. Traditional sector is subheading under dualism of less developed economies. This sector is largely subsistence sector of economy. We may illustrate its nature by referring to Africa, which like many other countries has been for a long a picture of traditional static society. The traditional economy is marked by following three principal features. One is the lack of specialization. Each one does all job of producing a commodity rather than specializing on a part of it. Two, the production is not normally or regularly undertaken for the sale. The primary objective of production is to create supplies for self-consumption. There is no motive for creation of surplus for market. No doubt there is some surplus that goes for exchange, but this is of marginal significance. Hence, it is an essentially a non-exchange sector of the economy. 3. The technology is stationary. With unchanging methods of production, the output tends to remain at same level over long periods, which is just the necessary minimum for subsistence living. With unchanging methods of production, the output tends to remain at same level over long periods, which is just the necessary minimum for subsistence living. These three features are in fact the different facets of reality of backwardness and are interrelated. The first one inhibits the growth of division of labor and therefore of skill and output. The second one partly flows from the first, as the surplus for the sale cannot emerge without output expansion handicapped by lack of specialization. In its turn, it limits the extent to which specialization can be carried out. It also sets limits to the improvement in the methods of production.
The last one is as much as a consequence of limited specialization and output as also a cause of either of them. Then comes modern sector. So just now we read about traditional sector. With this, we have come to the end of side A of cassette number 1, wherein we covered many things like important main characteristic of underdevelopment, and we covered all subheadings under economic backwardness being the first characteristic, second one being institutional and market imperfections, under which there were two subheadings, that is defective institutions and fragmentations and distortions of markets. And then we were in mid of, which was the third characteristic, yes, dualism of the less developed economies.